Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So continuing from the seventh canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, text number 37. Sriyamu Vacha. Aho Amisham Vayasadikanam. Vipashyatam Loka Viding Vimohaha. Yatra gatastatra gatang manushyam. Swayam sadharma api shochantya paritam. Partam. Sriyamu vacha. Aho amisham vayasadikanam. Vipashyatam loka viding vimohaha. Yatra gatastatra gatang manushyam. Swayam sadharma api shochantya partam. Sriyamu vacha. Aho amisham vayasadikanam. Vipashyatam loka viding vimohaha. Yatra gatastatra gatang manusham. Swayam sadharma api shochantya partam. Madhujis, please. Sri Yama Uvacha. Sri Yamaraj said, Aho, alas, Amisham, of these, Vayasa, by age, Adikanam, of those advanced, Vipashyatam, seeing every day, Lokavidim, the law of nature, that everyone dies. Vimohaha, the bewilderment. Yatra, from where? Agataha, came. Tatra, there. Gatam, returned. Manushyam, the man. Swayam, themselves. Swadharmaha, similar in nature, prone to die. Api, although. Shochanti, they lament. Aparitam, uselessly. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Yamaraj said, alas, how amazing it is. These persons who are older than me have full experience that hundreds and thousands of living entities have taken birth and died. Thus they should understand that they are also apt to die, yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 2.28, Avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidhananyeva tatra ka paridevana. All created beings are unmanifest in the beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when they are annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of the soul, and the other not believing in its existence, there is no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheists by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet even if for argument's sake we accept the atheistic theory, there is still no cause for lamentation. Apart from the separate existence of the soul, the material elements remain unmanifested before creation. From this subtle state of unmanifestation comes manifestation, just as from ether, air is generated, from air, fire is generated, from fire, water is generated, and from water, earth becomes manifested. From the earth, many varieties of manifestations take place. For example, a big skyscraper is manifested from the earth. When it's dismantled, the manifestation becomes again unmanifested and remains as atoms in the ultimate stage. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in the course of time, things are manifested and unmanifested. That's the difference. Then what cause is there for lamentation in either manifestation or unmanifestation? Somehow or other, even in the unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Both at the beginning and at the end, all elements remain unmanifested. And this does not make any real material difference. If we accept the Vedic conclusion as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Antavanta ime deha, that these material bodies are perishable in due course of time, Nitya syokta sharirnaha, but that the soul is eternal, then we must remember always that the body is like a dress. Therefore, why lament the changing of a dress? The material body has no factual existence in relation to the eternal soul. It is something like a dream. In a dream, we may think of flying in the sky or sitting in a chariot as a king. But when we wake up, we can see that we are neither in the sky nor seated on the chariot. The Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of the non-existence of the material body. Therefore, in either case, whether one believes in the existence of the soul or one does not believe in the existence of the soul, there is no cause for lamentation for loss of the body. In the Mahabharata, it is said, Adarshanad eha yatak punash chardarshanangata. This statement could support the theory of the atheistic scientist that the child in the womb of the mother has no life, but is simply a lump of matter. To follow this theory, if the lump of matter is aborted by a surgical operation, no life is killed. The body of a child is like a tumor, and if a tumor is operated upon and thrown away, no sin is involved. The same argument could be put forward in regard to the king and his queens. The body of the king was manifested from an unmanifested source, and again it became unmanifested from manifestation. Since the manifestation exists only in the middle, between the two points of unmanifestation, why should one cry for the body manifested in the interim? Om Ajnana Timirandasya Agnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitang Ena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Shimate Paladananda Swami Tone Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Shimate Bhagavadanda Swami Tone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Prasharani Nirvishesha Shuni Vari Paschatya Adi Sitarani. So this verse is very nice. It gets right down to the very philosophical basis of the beginning of self-realization. In other words, what are we? Because based upon what we identify with, that's what drives us in all of our undertakings, in all of our activities. Most people here in this material world, they're caught up in the idea that I am this material body, and therefore the things in relation to this material body are of prime importance. So we have to take everything very seriously that's happening in regard to this material body. If somebody dies in relation to this material body, it's very significant. If something comes to this material body, it's very beneficial. So many things, so many different considerations, simply based upon this interim period between two states of unmanifestation. But putting in proper context, it makes these so-called important things very trivial. When I was reading this verse, I was actually reminded of a verse previous in the Srimad Bhagavatam from the second canto, first chapter, text 4. It's actually very similar. Translation of that verse is, persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. You know, because people are so caught up with this interim period between states of unmanifestation, you know, they fail to see, you know, they fail to put the problems of life in proper perspective. And so they put so much stock, they put so much faith and trust in things that won't actually help them. As Prabhupada said, he liked to call them fallible soldiers. He pronounced it fallible because these different soldiers are bound to fall. People have so much faith in these fallible soldiers, thinking that if I put all my stock and trust in these different soldiers, then these will actually protect me. If I put faith in this body of mine, if I make it very nice, take great comfort and care in maintaining it, if I put great stock in my children, in my family, in my friends, in my society, then these things in the end, when I am in jeopardy, these things will actually save me. But that's not the case. These things are all fallible. They fall away when we're at that clutch moment when this body is about to die. Then we're on our own. There's two paragraphs in the purport for that particular verse that are very nice. It's the last two paragraphs. Prabhupada says, our friends, relatives, and so-called wives and children are not only fallible, but also bewildered by the outward glamour of material existence. As such, they cannot save us. Still, we think that we are safe within the orbit of family, society, or country. The whole materialistic advancement of human civilization is like the decoration of a dead body. Everyone is a dead body flapping only for a few days. Confirmed. And yet all the energy of human life is being wasted in the decoration of this dead body. Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out the duty of the human being after showing the actual position of bewildered human activities. Persons who are devoid of the knowledge of Atma-Tattva are misguided. But those who are devotees of the Lord and have perfect realization of transcendental knowledge are not bewildered. So this particular section is actually what I was reminded of when I was reading today's verse, talking about just a dead body flapping for a few days. Because ultimately that's what this is, that's what this experience is. We're spiritual beings having a material experience, rather than material beings having a spiritual experience, which many materialists, many people in this world, think is the case. They think, you know, I'm just a person and, you know, let me be spiritual. Let me have some spiritual experience. You know, they may come together in communion or, you know, associate with each other and share some, like, so-called deep experiences. And they leave the experience feeling like, wow, that was so spiritual. You know, like nowadays you have so many different New Agers and so-called light workers and this thing and that thing. And, you know, anyone who's been in some of the so-called meccas of New Age enlightenment, like Hawaii, California, or Florida, or like Sedona, Arizona, different places like this, it's very familiar. You know, people so much into this spiritual experience. But meanwhile, outside of their so-called spiritual experiences, they're living their material life. But that's factually not the case. We're all spiritual beings, bewildered and fooled into thinking that we're having some sort of material experience. And this material experience is temporary. Two different analogies came to mind when I was thinking about this. It's like, you know, throwing something up in the air or diving down into the water. In either case, it's a temporary experience. It's not something that can be maintained. You know, you can dive deep into the water, but at a certain point, you're going to run out of breath. And you have to surface again. You have to come back to the baseline reality. Or, you know, just like throwing a ball into the air. You may be able to throw the ball so high into the air, but eventually, it has to come down. Even if you perfect the ball by putting wings on it, and putting motors and engines on it, and gasoline, and so it can fly like an airplane, still, eventually that airplane is going to have to come down also. It can't just stay permanently in the air, because that's not a natural position to be in. Similarly, our experience here in this material world is not a natural position to be in. Just like it's mentioning in today's verse, the natural state is in an unmanifested, unmaterially manifested state. Namely, it's the spiritual state of existence. But for this temporary period of time, we're in this condition of material manifestation and we're taking everything so seriously. Because everyone's misguided. There's actually, for this other verse that I quoted from the second canto, there's a room conversation where Prabhupada is discussing this verse. And it's actually rather interesting. If you just read the room conversation, it may seem very unrelated to the actual purport of the verse. But if you think about it, it's actually quite profound what Prabhupada's talking about. Even though it seems like he just talks about the verse and then he talks about things that are totally disconnected with the verse, but actually they're very closely interrelated. So I'll just read a few little excerpts from this room conversation, to room conversation that Prabhupada's having with Tamal Krishna Goswami. So after the verse is read, and then the purport's read, Prabhupada says something rather amazing. Prabhupada says, "Sometimes I become surprised how I have written this. Although I'm the writer, still sometimes I'm surprised how these things have come. Such vivid description. Where is such literature throughout the world? It's all Krishna's mercy. Every line is perfect." Just hearing his own purport read to him, Prabhupada's thinking, this is so incredible. Every line of this is perfect. Tamal Krishna Goswami says, "The purports are as nice as the shlokas." Prabhupada, "It's explained in this way." Tamal Krishna, "Srila Prabhupada, it's 7:30 now." Then it breaks. And then it goes on to something seemingly different. You know, a tangent in the conversation from the verse. But really, it's not that disconnected. I'll explain later. Prabhupada, "I have not done it, but I have seen it." Tamal Krishna, "You learned everything by seeing. You said that you learned how to cook by watching your mother." Prabhupada, "Sometimes I used to cook." Tamal Krishna, "Oh, for your family?" Prabhupada, "Our family men. I asked my mother, 'I'll do this, that.' They'll allow. All right." Tamal Krishna, "You said that sometimes you would be walking in the footpath and you would watch those men cook there." Prabhupada, "Not cook. Somebody is doing some artistic work. I'll stand. I'll see how they're doing." Tamal Krishna, "Artistic?" Prabhupada, "Just like knitting. So I'll learn knitting by standing before. They'll make some flower of wool, so I'll learn it, and it will come out. That was my hobby. And similarly, I learned how to worship Radha Krishna." Tamal Krishna, "By watching? You watched your father?" Prabhupada, "Father and the Mulik's Takrabari, I'll do. I'll ask my father, 'Give me a deity, I shall worship.' Yes, take deity." So then later on in the conversation towards the end, the conversation turns towards the condition of society. Prabhupada, "I have thought it over. It was very, very nice. What is this nonsense society? Tin car?" Tamal Krishna, "And they're becoming worse." Prabhupada, "And rubber tire, that's all." Tamal Krishna, "The cars nowadays." Prabhupada, "Canister, tin canister. In your country, these have been all piled up." Tamal Krishna, "The cars?" Prabhupada, "Whole cars, useless, piled up. But then they are smashed and again melted and again crushed." Shatyadanya, "They build them so that in 1 year, 2 years, they break. Then they can sell more." Prabhupada, "Because they have no other business. Punat punash charvita charvananam. Chewing the chewed. Make a car, break it. And again melt it. And again make another car. That's all. This is their civilization. Car-making civilization. No spiritual idea. No ambition for spiritual life. But they'll do. They'll do something. So therefore they are making, breaking more. Make the car, break the car, again make the car, again break the car. Therefore you are habituated to change. Tamal Krishna. If something is nice, it must be destroyed. Prabhupada. No, it has, everything is destroyed, material. So this once again ties into the very point of this verse. And also Prabhupada's elucidating a more subtle point that's necessary to recognize here. You know, in the beginning of this conversation, Prabhupada's making the point about learning. Prabhupada was mentioning that he learned everything by seeing, by observing. He would watch his mother cook, so he learned how to cook from observing his mother. He'd be on the roadside looking at different artisans, and they'd be knitting something. So by watching them knit, he also learned how to knit. Apparently it became his hobby, learning how to knit wool and flowers. So in this way, by observing, by watching, he was able to learn and then also act. And by watching his father, he was able to learn how to worship Radha Krishna deities. By watching his father, he picked up the habit of worshipping his own Jagannath deities. And then it moves on later in the conversation about the nature of society, talking about how it's simply a tin car society, making and breaking, making and breaking. Because everyone's so enamored with the useless propagation of these material elements and implements for this material body. You know, it's mode of passion. And everyone's simply engaged in creating and destroying different material objects simply for the purpose of maintaining this material body. Because everyone's simply following the example. Everyone in society is watching what other people are doing. And based upon that watching, they're also engaging in activities. Just like Prabhupada was saying, by observing other people, he was able to learn how to do so many things. So people in society, they're learning from their leaders, from their role models. Their role models exhibit different behavioral patterns, and so people take it that this is what should be aspired for in life. They see some movie, their favorite actor, and they think, oh wow, I want to be like that. I want to be some big politician, or I want to be some sports athlete, I want to be some movie star, I want to be this thing or that thing. Based upon watching other people in society, other great men. In fact, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 3:21, Yad yad acharati sreshtas tattar eve taro janaha, sayad pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. This is the point that Prabhupada is making in this room conversation. That's why it's so essential that we have people who are educated. Just like Prabhupada was mentioning at the end of that purport. Persons who are devoid of knowledge of Atma-tattva are misguided, but those who are devotees of the Lord and have perfect realization of transcendental knowledge are not bewildered. In other words, those who are devotees of the Lord, they understand the situation, the nature of this existence we find ourselves in. We're here temporarily trapped in this material experience. But those who are spiritually realized understand that I'm an eternal spirit soul. It's my eternal nature to be spiritual, to be eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Being here in this temporary material world that's full of suffering is not my constitutional position. Thus they're not bewildered by it, and they follow the examples of the great acharyas, of the previous spiritual teachers. And by following their example, they can learn how to disengage themselves from this endless repetition of material birth and death. Whereas if we follow the example of the materialists, we'll simply perpetuate our continued cycle of suffering. So that's why it's so important that everyone genuinely take up this mission of Lord Chaitanya and the previous acharyas. Because by taking up this mission, we can help guide the rest of society. We can provide that proper example by which to mold our life so we can come to the proper realization that we're eternal spiritual beings temporarily trapped in a miserable material experience. And then provide people with the proper example to follow. So that's why it's so important that we take this process of hearing and chanting the glories of the holy names, the glories of Krishna, so seriously. Namely, Harinam. Like, for instance, last night we all went on Harinam. And it was very nice. We went to Santa Monica and so many people participated. All kinds of kids, you know, youth, old people even came. They danced. They were blissful. They had a good time. We had a good time. And then also taking up this Brihat Murdanga. Just like on the Harinam, there's the regular Murdanga. But that Murdanga sound doesn't travel so far. You go a few buildings away and all of a sudden the rest of the sounds of the material world swallow you whole. And then you're back in the material pool. But the transcendental vibration of this Brihat Murdanga book distribution is span space and time. So with one beat of this Brihat Murdanga, say here in Los Angeles, somebody halfway around the world, 3-4 generations from now, can get one of these books, read it, become a pure devotee, perfect their life, and go back to Godhead. That's why this Brihat Murdanga is so valuable, it's so important. That's why Prabhupada's spiritual master instructed him, if you ever get money, print books. Because this process of book distribution is the most important process. It's more important than anything else. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasizes so much. He said, sell the temple. Tear out all the marble from the temple, sell it, and print books. Distribute this knowledge far and wide. What's the use of maintaining these different structures if it simply causes bickering and fighting over material things? Rather, get the money from it, print books, and help people understand what their position is. Help people understand how to make spiritual advancement. Set the example for all the world to follow. This is more important. So it's so essential, it's so vital that everyone take up this process, because not only do the people who receive these books get benefit from it, but also the person distributing these books gets tremendous benefit from it. It's described, it's like the fast track for spiritual realization. Prabhupada explained that you'll be not just recognized, not just quickly recognized, but very quickly recognized by Krishna by engaging this activity. So it's really the fast track for purification and the fast track for spiritual realization. By stepping out of your comfort zone, talking to some stranger that you've never met before, in some part of town that you'd probably be afraid to go otherwise. Step out of your comfort zone. Say hello to someone. Imagine that. and try to share Krishna consciousness with them. And I guarantee, it works. It works for everyone. You'll become blissful by this simple process. So on that note, today is the second day of our monthly Sankirtan festival. We'll be going out distributing books to the wonderful people here in Los Angeles who are suffering so much in this metropolitan quagmire. So this is the fourth monthly Sankirtan festival that we've had so far. Every previous one has been extremely blissful. Ask anyone who's participated in the previous festivals. Everyone's always complaining, why do we have to stop now? Why can't we go more? It's always a big disappointment when we have to stop. Nobody wants to. Because it's so blissful. We're so happy in this process of serving Krishna that we don't want to stop. And even if we could distribute all day long, which I've had that opportunity. One time I was at Bonnaroo. It's a music concert out in Tennessee. Manchester, Tennessee. And it's an all-day thing. So, you know, I would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and immediately go out and distribute books. Immediately. I didn't have time to waste. I just woke up and I didn't do anything else. I just immediately went out to distribute books. And I distributed books all the way till 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock I bathed. I changed my clothes, took a little breakfast, chanted my rounds, and then I continued distributing books all the way until 10 o'clock that night. And still, unsatiated, still desiring more, I want more. It wasn't enough. And you're out all day distributing books. I remember that day, the sun was setting. I was dragging my bag behind me, and I was just looking for the next person to talk to share Prabhupada's books with. And I felt like I was just floating. Didn't even feel like my feet were touching the ground. And as I was watching the sunset, walking from one person to the next, I was deeply feeling within my heart, wow, this is the perfection of existence. Why would anyone want to do anything else with their life? But even then, even distributing books for like 20 hours in a day, still not enough. But that's the nature of the spiritual experience. That's the nature of Krishna consciousness. The more you dive into it, the more blissful it becomes, and the more you hanker for it. So we're meeting at 9:30 today at the Bhakti House. Everyone, please come. Dive deeply in this transcendental ocean of service to Krishna. We'll be happy to help you serve. Any questions or comments? Jai. Prabhupada ki jai.